Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I want to start by saying thank you so much for your lovely messages and your just general brilliance as an audience for last week's episode with Sarah Brown. And some of you listened to my apology at the beginning and said I was being too hard on myself. Thank you very much, it was really kind of you, and I've just really appreciated it because I was just worried about sending it out there, but you've all been so kind, and I hope the episode helped in any tiny way at all for what was a very difficult week for some people last week with Baby Loss Awareness Week. So thank you for getting in touch. This week I'm talking to the very lovely and very brilliant TV presenter Sabrina Grant. Sabrina is the host of Super Shoppers on Channel 4, but you may have also seen her on Lorraine and This Morning, and has another show which is coming out very soon on BBC Two. Sabrina came in to talk to me about her older sister Raquel, who died from suicide.
Kind of enjoyed lockdown.
Oh, have you? You're one of those. You're like, it was okay.
Yeah, because we don't often get the time, like gifted time, especially in our industry and just in life.
True.
We're just all go, next thing, next thing, next thing. Yeah, we don't get time to take stock.
Yeah, you're right. I had my second baby 5 days before lockdown. So for me, I didn't get gifted any time. But I watched other people having time and I was like, yeah, that does look nice. But you're right. This industry especially, like, is always like, what are you doing next? What's the next job? Not even as soon as one finishes, is it? It's like halfway through one, you're like, oh, I better get something lined up. What am I doing? So yeah, it must have been quite nice. Unfortunately, this isn't the lockdown podcast, even though obviously we could all talk about that. So who are we remembering today?
We are remembering my older sister.
What's her name?
Rachel Chantel Grant. But
Rachel Chantel.
She changed her name to Raquel.
Oh, did she?
I'm not sure what age she did that, but I just remember she changed her name to Raquel, so we called her Rax or Raki.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and she's my sister. So she was born in April, April 14th, 1978, and she died in 2010.
So you've just had your 10-year then?
We just had our 10-year anniversary, which was like 10 years, Cariad.
I know. It's really weird, isn't it? Like, numbers, this is the thing about anniversaries. You're like, your logic brain is like, numbers don't matter. What does it care? But then 10 happens and you're like, 10. And it's like so loud, isn't it? It's like, it's just something your brain is like, wow, a whole decade, a whole 10. It suddenly seems like 9. You're like, oh, 9. Okay. But then, 10
is
like
just something else. Yeah. And luckily we were able to go to the cemetery.
Oh, wow.
Because they had opened cemeteries. They closed them down during lockdown, which I thought was very strange. Because I was like, surely that's the easiest place to socially distant.
Yeah, it's true, actually, yeah.
Because everything's just sort of set out.
Yeah.
And I really felt for some people that go and visit every single day.
I know.
They weren't able to do that. But, yes, we had the 10 years. She was 32 when she died.
Oh, gosh.
And I lost my sister to suicide. So it was a death that just changed my life and my family's life forever.
Now, we've had people talk about suicide before. And
Ashley and
and Jen offered her brother took his own life as well, and the amazing Poona Bell, her husband took his own life, and she described it really well of like it's like trauma on top of trauma, because you're not just dealing with a death, you know, like people who've lost a parent to an illness or anything, and obviously that's very traumatic, but when someone obviously makes that decision, it's an extremely traumatic time and period that you're dealing with, because there's so much extra stuff, I think, going on.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like layers to the grief.
Yeah, definitely. So let's go back a little bit. So she was, how much older is she than you? Like, what's your gap?
We were 8 years apart.
8 years apart. And were you like, did that make you close or?
Do you know what? I've written a poem that I read at her funeral. That will give you a bit of an idea of us and our relationship. We were 8 years apart. I did grow up with my sister in the 90s. So things are a little bit different back then. And I wanted to, I wrote this poem. I think it was the first thing I'd ever written.
Wow.
And I only wrote it because my sister loved poetry.
Oh.
And when she died, I think I started reading a lot of her diaries and paperwork. And she wrote so many poems. So I wanted to like read a poem at her funeral. But I just found that everything I was finding online just seemed very generic. And it's great if you can't find the words to say. But I just felt like it wasn't from my heart. The words. So I attempted to write a poem, which just kept me up all night. I don't think I slept the whole night before the funeral. And I was like, I've got to write this poem. Yeah, I'll share it with you. Here it is.
Yes, please. I'd love to hear it.
Okay. So, my sister Raquel is so cool. Her smile and presence would light up any room. You'd always get her makeup on your cheek when she hugged you, and the strong scent of her Versace red jeans perfume. My sister Raquel wasn't very tall. She was petite and beautiful. She always made an effort and she'd always look so cool. I never really liked nicknames, but I loved the way she'd greet me. She'd smile and hold her arms out and say, "Hello, Breenie." My sister Raquel is so neat and tidy. Everything has its place. A colour scheme and stylish decor. She really had great taste. My sister Raquel is such a good dancer. I would love to watch her dance. Doing her famous stomp to any beat would always make me laugh. My sister Raquel had real talent. She loved the performing arts. I admired her so much when I watched her in her school plays. It's no surprise that I grew up to follow in her ways. My sister Raquel is so fun. She'd always plan things for us to do, like teaching me how to apply makeup. She'd even pluck my thick eyebrows too. I love my sister Raquel. She's the best. But my friend Raquel would invite me round for delicious dinners, girly sleepovers, and give me lots of her clothes. We'd laugh and gossip and stay up late, watching repeat episodes of Friends that she recorded off the TV on video. My friend Raquel is so funny. The way she'd tell a lengthy story without a pause or draw for breath, with facial expressions and gestures that were always over the top, to be sure that this is a story that you never forgot. My friend Raquel was so creative. She always had new ideas that just flowed, like the time she sewed synthetic flowers on our flip-flops to hide our ugly toes. My friend Raquel loves to do car boot sales with me. Even if we didn't have a car, we'd beg others, we'd flatter, we'd plead. We'd always manage to get our own way. Yay, another car booty, we would say. We'd wake up early to hit the fairs and make some extra pocket money. Raquel would make us a packed lunch and we'd pray that it would be sunny. After setting up, we'd rummage through each other's stuff and end up trying each other's clothes on. Then we'd swap and take home each other's junk, a book, a candle, a crayon. My friend Raquel didn't care when people stared at us from afar as we very proudly put back what we loved into the boot of our car. I love my friend Raquel and every moment we spent together. But my angel Raquel has special powers. She is off on a new, exciting spiritual journey. My angel Raquel will always be there for me, protecting, guiding, reassuring. My angel Raquel was teaching me to have strength and courage and to love unconditionally. I believe my angel will continue to shed their light wherever she is. So I promise to my angel to live on and grow on from all that she did. So that when my angel Raquel looks down to check on me, she'll forever be proud of her baby sister, Brini.
Aww. That's so lovely. Oh,
that's my poem.
It's beautiful.
And
it's,
you know,
so
what?
Beautiful.
I realised that I haven't read that since 10 years ago, since the funeral.
Wow.
I haven't actually got that out and had a look over it. Is there anything like that for you, like from your dad's funeral?
Oh, yeah. I think it's hard that things that at the time it's so full of emotion that almost you do sort of put them in a drawer, because at that point you're like, oh, you know what, I can't keep looking at that. It's so powerful and emotional for me. And then life goes on and you forget about the drawer.
That's the thing.
And it's not till you suddenly have that moment, like, you know, you find it on a computer or something, you're like, oh, whoa. Like, I've had that with finding order of services, you know, being like, what's that? Oh, whoa, that's the order. Oh, yeah, I've got that, haven't I? Of course I've got that. It's like those sort of sudden time travel moments, aren't they? Where you're just like, oh, like, I guess the last time you read that was the funeral. So
yeah.
It takes you back. It's a really, really sweet poem. It's so lovely. It really sums up. I can really get the sense of the pair of you. And especially when you have that 8-year gap, I can imagine as well. Like, she's really a big sister in that case, isn't she?
Yeah.
Like,
she was.
And so how old were you when she died? So
I was 20. I just turned 24.
Oh, that's very
young.
Which
is actually really, really young.
Yeah. And I imagine at the time, did you think you weren't young, though? Were you like...
I didn't think I was young. I thought I was very grown.
Yeah.
And interesting you say that, because one of the challenges I've had to overcome in my grief was when I turned 32.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. This is a really young age.
Mm.
And the more you grow up and the more you start to experience life and deal with life, and you start to notice yourself, yeah, life can be really hard sometimes. Mm. And it was like, wow, she was so young. So,
I think it's
so
hard
young.
When there's that gap. I mean, obviously it's different, but my dad was 44. And obviously as a teenager, I was like, part of me did think, well, he was old. Like, you know old people die and you're like,
yeah.
To you, your mum and dad are so old, aren't they? Like, well, look at them, they're so old. And now, obviously, yeah, like, I'm not there yet, but I'm approaching that age. And my brother is much closer. He's 4 years older than me. And I think we all have a little bit of a, like, tension about it, you know, of like, oh, because it's just, I think, like you said, you always think you're old, don't you? You always think, no, I'm a grown up. And now, even now, you sort of realise, like, no, you're not a grown up. Like, you're so young. And 32 is it's impossibly young, isn't it? It's so young.
32 is just so young. And I even remember, like, on my 33rd birthday, waking up and then just being like, oh, I think I woke up and I just burst out crying straight away, because I was like, I've now outgrown my older sister. And I'll never, like, my memory of her will always be to 32. And then I've outgrown her. And yeah, that age gap when we were young is quite a big age gap. You know, she adored me, but I was very much annoying little sister.
Yeah, it's a big chunk, isn't it?
It's a big, like, chunk, you know, yeah. And we were getting to the age where we could hang out, like, you know, the later part of my poem, like, going to car boot fairs, because she moved out of home when she was, I think, 17, 18. She moved out quite a young age. And so it wasn't until I started getting a bit older, having my own independence, that I could go over there, stay over, and car boot sales became our thing. Have you ever done a car boot sale before?
Yes.
Have you ever done your own and sold things?
Yeah.
So you know the buzz.
Yeah, the buzz. Me and my friend from school, Susanna, she was really into them. And we wanted to go travelling, I think. So that was her thing. It was like, right, we'll just do car boots. And that's how we'll raise our money. So we used to go on a Sunday and with, like, crap, you know, because you're a teenager, so you just have crap. Nothing anyone really wants. But the worst was when it rained and you'd get all that way to some, like, field in Essex. And then it's like, oh, we have to go home. I was so annoyed. She was
that's
more into
the worst.
It. I lost my patience. But
did she
want
to stay out when it rained?
Yeah, I think she was more like, well, we'll go next week. And I was like, oh, but it rained. Like, it rained. Like, surely let's give this plan up. This isn't working. But yeah, she loved a car booty. I like the way you said that, car booty. Yeah.
That was my sister. Like, come rain or shine, we were going. We were going. Like, there's no way we're not going. And also, to think, I didn't really have that much stuff. She seemed to always have some stuff. I feel like she started to take things from other people so that she could sell it.
So she knew good stuff. She's like, that will go well at the car boot.
Yeah.
You've got to know your car boot audience as well, haven't you?
You have to know them. Mm-hmm. It's so true. I remember we went to one, she took me to, and she's like, beware, okay? These people are very eager. She gave me like a little pep talk in the car. These people are very eager. As soon as we get there, like, we'll be unloading, they'll be like in your boot. And I was like,
oh,
you're joking.
I hate those ones who come in the boot when you're not ready. They're like, calm down, guys. Yeah. I'll put it out in a minute. Oh, God. She knew her car boots.
She knew her car boots. She was really good. So I grew up. So we shared a room.
Oh, wow.
Which was fun and interesting. She was very neat. Do you know what, Carrie? I wrote down, I love your podcast, by the way. Let's just say that, because giving a platform to just talk about grief and sadness and loss, but also the fact that you know that, like everything in life, that's all balanced out. If we don't experience the joy, you know, we don't know the grief and the unhappiness and just like the balance of life. So even though it's just nice hearing everyone's different personal relationship with grief, and that it actually isn't all doom and gloom.
No, it never is. It never is. Nothing in life is ever like you said about lockdown. Like, you know, it was a very stressful, but there were moments, obviously, where you were like, this is actually quite nice today. Like, nothing is ever all awful or all brilliant. Yeah. Like, that's how we work as humans. And I love hearing about, like you said, describing the funness of someone, because mm-hmm. I think we don't often, like, when you, I imagine you have this, if you say to someone, oh, well, this is how my sister died, or she, you know, she's not around, all you get focused on talking is that, and you don't get to hear about car booty, and like, you don't get to feel that, like, oh yeah, like, she sounds really fun, like, all that stuff gets packed away slightly, and we don't unpack it and go, no, was that as well, look at all this stuff.
I describe grief, or as everyone's described it, as like, or any major traumatic event that happens to you, is like someone's come and just sliced you open with a big knife, and it's a wound, and everyone can see it, so everyone pays attention and care, you know, and you'll go and you'll get your stitches, and then so it's healing, but then some things happen, the triggers, and it knocks your wound and it splits open again. But maybe only you're there to mend it that time. And then eventually it does heal. But then you have this wonderful, you know, scar that is on you for the rest of your life, on your body. And I think the years it gets down, you know, your scar is there. I mean, you get dressed, you go out and you live your life as you should. But that scar is still there. And because it's covered now, people don't really ask you about it anymore, or the memories, and it's just not even a conversation that you have. And I think even during lockdown, I started to talk to my mum more about memories and ask questions.
Yeah.
And just like, and I really am jumping around because there's so much to say, but especially with our loss, like respecting that your family will all grieve differently. You can't make assumptions about how they're feeling, why they grieve in the way that they do. You just have to be very respectful.
I think it's hard as well, because I think when you're young, and you were young at 24, like, it's taken me a long time to go, oh, people do it differently. That doesn't mean they're not doing it. Because I think when you're young, you're like, well, I'm doing this. If they're not doing this, it's like they don't care. And you're like, no, it just affects people so differently, and people will have the strangest reaction, like, to you, you're like, why are you reacting like that? Mm-hmm. I can only be angry, I can only cry or something, and someone else can't. And it's so hard to understand. It's such a personal journey, and especially in a family, like, you know, I guess, you know, she was your big sister, but to someone else she was a daughter, she was a younger sister, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, like, all those different dynamics affect the grief in so many myriad ways.
I'm just going to go back to the layers of grief. So I think if you've lost someone to suicide, there's lots of different layers to it. So obviously there's shock, complete shock, you feel sick, you're angry, you feel guilt, why didn't I see the signs, you feel responsible, and then there's just the deep sadness in, I always said, just learning that you actually never really know someone, even a family member, you only know what they show of you.
Yeah.
And that's a really deep sadness, the fact that my own sister, like, was going through, you know, the biggest turmoil, but put on a happy face for me. Mm. Probably because she loved me, but it's just that you only see what people show of themselves.
I think it's, especially when it comes, like you said, to suicide, because it is, there are so many added layers of what's going on, and it's really tricky, isn't it? Like, we are completely individuals, even though you can love someone so much and be connected to them and have such wonderful times with them. Yeah, like, at the end of the day, it is a choice what people reveal to you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that. Like, you don't have any control over that at all, especially with...
No, you're not at all. So I guess, I know you're saying I'm quite positive, but I think a lot of my lessons from this is about choice and respecting my sister's choice. Mm. And, you know, because I truly know if she actually sat there and pondered, you know, on everything, on the family, you know, she would not have done what she'd done. And in a way, probably she didn't speak to anyone because she knew what she wanted to do, which was best for her. Mm. And I think when it's my own selfishness that I want her to be here with me. Mm. You know,
has that been a part of your journey to respect her choice? Like, do you know what I mean? Like you said, in those 10 years, because, like, I think that is such an incredible phrase. And I think it's a really noble place to be with your grief, but that must have been such a hard place to get to.
Yeah, it's one of the... I just think that's the only thing you can do. I respect her choice, her decision. It's done. It can't be undone. Mm. Do I wish she didn't do it? Yes.
Yeah, of course.
That's all I can... Yeah. So... just from growing up and then having that event in my life and that sort of shaping how I live, you know, I've become such a hypersensitive person. Mm. I really can, like, empathize with other people's pain, but it's all hindsight. And of course we have that age gap, so I only knew what I knew then when we were growing up together. And I just think, oh, there's so many things that you feel like, oh, just so many things that maybe I could have helped, maybe I could have done that, maybe I could have done this. And you just do have to let go, because you just drive yourself insane with it. And you just have to say that that's what it was. It's neither good nor bad, but it was the best thing for her.
Yeah, it's really, I think it's just... I think that's a really wonderful thing to say. Wonderful is the wrong word, but, like, it's not good nor bad. It just is what happened. Mm-hmm. And I think as humans... it's really hard to get to that place with grief, with death, because, like you said, you just don't want people to be dead.
Like, you just don't want it.
No, I don't like it. I don't want it. Like, no, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
And this, the way that death just takes people, the way that that is an option, that is a thing. Humans can die. It's such a... I'm still 20 plus years getting my head around it, that can happen. And I think it, like you said, it sounds like you have reached a place of not peace, obviously, but, like, I don't know. How do you describe where you feel about it now, 10 years on? Is it acceptance, or is that not quite the right word either? Just
it's just going back to what I said about the scar. I have the scar there.
Yeah.
And things come up all the time. For example, I actually have another poem. So this was written this year.
Oh, wow.
And there's a poet that I love called Yersa Daly Ward. And she shared a writing tip. And also my friend Laura Dockrell, who's a writer,
she
started a writing club during lockdown.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, you know, we've got all the time in the world. Let's do new things. And let's... I'm going to join a writing club. I challenged myself to start writing. And Yessa has said, write down, she's had a free writing exercise. It said, write down the last thing that you said to someone that you love. And I started to think, because I was back home with my mum, that was like bringing up all sorts of memories, like being in home. And I did start to think of my sister a lot more. And so I thought, what was the last conversations that we had? And what was one of the last things that she used to say to me? And she used to ask me to sing to her.
Oh.
And so I wrote down, why did I never sing to you? And I did this free writing. And Cariad, I cried. You know, those real guttural, like, cries. Which, then,
yes.
which you actually
think,
start to enjoy.
Who's making that noise? Like, yes. What is that noise? It's me.
Yeah. But then you actually start to enjoy it. And then you just really go for it. I'm going to cry this out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to Brit school. I went to performing arts school, which my sister knew and loved that I was doing that. We're quite a creative family. And I studied musical theatre. And anytime I went around to her house, she would ask me to sing to her. And I would just not want to sing. I find that so, even though I sang, I don't think it was my greatest strength out of the three of the arts. I'd say acting was first, then dancing, then singing. But I would just never sing to her because I was just embarrassing. And singing's very personal. It's like so exposing. And it's like, I always think singing's from the soul, because when I hear music, I feel like certain music just really speaks to my soul. It does something very differently to me.
I think that sounds like you're a good singer, because some people can sing and it doesn't come from the soul.
Really?
And those people can sing at a drop of the hat. And then you're like, yeah, this doesn't feel like it's that vulnerable. It's like, they're like, this is my song. And you're like,
and
yeah,
they go
yes,
for it.
You can sit down. So yeah, I think it sounds like you were a good singer. If you were like, no, this needs to be right. But yeah, it's hard when people go, perform. You're like, I feel shy. So yeah, so there's a poem started from that point.
It's a poem started from that point. So I just wrote this down and I mean, it didn't come out as perfectly as it is now, but I did mainly write all of this, and it just, I think it kind of speaks for itself, and we could discuss after, we'll see what you think. So it's called Sing to Me. Why did I never sing to you when you were so desperate to hear my soul lyrically entwine with yours, to share in a vulnerability we've never practiced before, especially not without warming up? Why did I never sing to you when all you ever did was sing my praises? So what tune did you wish to hear from me? Would it be my song choice or yours? Or might it be a tune we both instinctively knew, but its melody we kept silent in our sorrow, both knowing that the notes of that song are just too high to reach? We were quietly in tune, you and I, so why request to hear a solo out loud? Surely you can imagine how I might sound without listening to a whole composition. Just sing to me, Breenie, you say mostly every time we spent together. I'll close my eyes, or we can do it at the same time if it makes it any easier. For a second, a beat in my mind, I believed we could harmonise harmoniously, form a perception of pleasant arrangements if we chose the right notes with caution and stuck to a particular key. But I was still too scared to take the lead in our duet, for fear I'd start too fast or too low, then you'd hold back and struggle to join in. But if you sang to me first, taught me the scale in which you like to lay your notes on, I may not have worried about starting octaves apart. But my doubt was strong. How could I ever sing to you when my succession of notes formed a distinctive sequence, a melody that had become something I was scared and ashamed of? Why did I never sing to you? I couldn't even form a hum. Because if I truly sang my heart out and you didn't like the sound, I was sure I would never sing again.
That's really lovely.
Oh, Cariad.
You got me.
I know. We're on Zoom, so people can't see.
Oh, that's so... Wow. Without wanting to sound like an English teacher, the your first poem was beautiful. That I can see.
My writing's come
growth,
on, right?
Your writing's come on.
Thank you, darling.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Everyone, listen
but
to Sabina, please. That's wonderful. That's
it really,
really, really beautiful. I just really... it really expresses the complex nature of a relationship in a family. Like, whether it's parents or siblings, like how much you can look up to someone and also not understand that they also look up to you, but you don't understand because that's not what you can see in yourself. Like, I think that's really, it's a really complicated relationship. And I think especially that really, for me, brings forward because you, like you said, that 8-year gap is so important, isn't it? Because you really were a little sister.
Yeah.
And then faced with, like you said, the choice that she made, like, how could you... She's your big sister, right? She knows what she's doing. She's the one who tells you what to do and all of that. Because I have a big brother, and I think when you do have older siblings, you do always feel like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, they're the ones who know what they're doing. And it's... I just thought it was very beautiful.
Thank you.
I want to give you a little... I don't know what else to do.
We do clicks in poetry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Click, click, click.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. How did you feel after you wrote that? Like, did it help you? Like, did you feel like something you said unlocked, or?
I was so much lighter.
Wow.
And I've actually got a book that I'm about to read about holding trauma in your body. And it did feel like an absolute shift. Firstly, I didn't know all those words were there. And what I love about writing, because I've just started writing during lockdown, so it's a new thing that that's unlocked in me, just writing to express yourself, and writing firstly just for you. No one's going to see it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Just put the pen to paper and just write. It's so cathartic, and it's very, like, I just felt lighter. And I released, I guess, guilt that I had. But then it's exactly what you said. I was young. You're so that 8-year difference, if you take it back to me being... Oh God, let me not do maths.
No, I can't. That's why I asked you earlier.
But like, take it to me being 8 years old and then she being a teenager. You do. I'm in awe of my sister. I look up to her. You naturally think, oh, elder people know best. And you know, there were things I maybe didn't know about her. I'm thinking, you know, why did she move out of home so young? And sometimes like when we'd have family gatherings, or, you know, she could be quite... I just remember, you know, she was either really fun and life and soul, or she would, you know, she could get quite angry and quite confrontational as well. So there was just the layers to your family and like not wanting, and, you know, and then going around to my sister's house, and, you know, she stopped coming around for Christmases actually. And so, you know, and I really missed her at Christmas, and there used to be this sort of like relay of my brother taking the gifts that we bought for her to her, and her twin, you know, bringing the gifts that she bought. So there became a real kind of disconnect sometimes in her younger years, until I started hanging out with her. And it's just the fact that there's just so many things that you want to say and you don't want to bring it up. And I'm the sort of person who hates confrontation. I used to hate confrontation, and I just wanted everything to be okay. And it's just like, just all the conversations that we just never had, but probably knew, but just didn't speak about, for fear of causing pain or...
I understand as a child just being like, oh, if I just don't ask, then nobody gets to open that wound today, you know? And you know your own wound, so you're like, well, I'm just keeping mine plaster on. Like, why does anyone... No one else needs their plaster ripped off today, do they? But equally, you do need those conversations to understand why things happened. It's a really... such a balance, isn't it?
Such a balance. And I'd say that's a big part of I think helping with grief in that way. I think talk to people as much as you can. I was going to say, it sounds weird to say. I was about to say, I was lucky enough to have a best friend, a childhood friend, who lost her dad to suicide. And it feels weird to say lucky enough. Actually, I am. It is a lucky thing. It's an incredible thing.
That we had each other.
And I'd been away on holiday with her family. And it was like 3 days into getting back that I heard the news of my sister. And I called my friend, my wonderful friend, Francesca. And obviously told her what happened and had just cried. And we've just had... It's just we both have these big traumatic events that have happened in our lives that have brought us extremely close together. Yeah. You never expect to have that kind of bond with a friend.
I think it's really, like, this is the thing, sometimes when people say, oh, you know, talk to someone, and that can sound so, like, nebulous, like, why? What does it mean? But there's this really strange human thing that you, I think, when you have had a trauma, you need to find other people that have had your trauma, and if you can share grief, you're like, that's nice, okay, yeah, I'm not alone. And if they can share your specific grief, it's like, because you just, it's like you don't have to explain yourself. And I don't know, like, again, logically, you're like, well, why should it matter? Like, there were different people. But I had the same. So my dad died when I was 15, and one of my friends at school had lost her dad to cancer when she was 8. And we were friends, like, we really liked each other. We did our drama together. And so you know what I'm talking about. And then when it happened, she was just there. And she didn't have to say anything. She didn't have to be like, oh, God, are you okay? Like, she was just, she'd just look at me and be like, mm-hmm. And I remember, again, feeling so lucky that I was like, oh, Hannah gets it. Like, Han gets it, thank God. Like, when those moments and anniversaries or, you know, Father's Day for us is like such a... She just got it. And I think because also we both wanted to, you know, we both liked doing acting and performing, and so we had that shared moment and understanding of each other, and then this extra trauma. And I think it really helps to find someone in your gang, sort of thing.
Definitely.
I think lucky is I agree with you, is sort of the right word, because if you hadn't had that, it could have been, it's been especially around suicide, you could have felt really isolated of like, well, who else has this happened to? Who else's family is dealing with this in the same way? Did you find other friends were struggled to talk about it because of the way that she had died?
Yeah, I think I have some lovely friends. Another one of my best friends, she called me every day. And not even to just like, you know, I didn't have to explain everything to her, but she would just call me every day, and it meant so much to me just to be like, hi, just checking in. And that was great. And I had other friends that just, you know, have since apologized, but they just didn't know how to handle it at all, and they just almost distanced themselves from me. I had a friend also who was struggling with her own mental health, and was having suicidal thoughts, and she just couldn't deal with me. But then in time, I think there's like, and that's why you have a lot of different types of friends. I think in time, people come together and people are there for you at a certain reason. I'm all about surrendering now, Cariad. I've learned that 2020, my year is surrender. Yeah. Just surrender to the things that are out of your control and put out what you want to receive. And I just think that I've been very lucky with my friends. If you are grieving, I don't know what my best thing is, if you can, even if it's just one person you could talk to, try to just find someone who will listen.
You trust, isn't it? It's finding that one person who, I don't know if you, because I'm quite irritable as a person. I get quite annoyed at nothing. I'm like, big things don't bother me. If you do something massive, I'm like totally fine with it. Like, little things annoy me. And I think if you can find someone who's like, when you say... That's what I don't know if you have this, like, sometimes I want to talk about it and then someone will say something. I'm like, oh, that's not what I want you to say. Like, yeah. Oh, no, I don't want to talk about it. Now it's ruined. Like,
yeah.
But you need to find someone who's, like, not going to irritate you. And generally, I'd say, like, if they are in the club, inverted commas, they kind of know things they that are irritating. It. Or you, even if they do say something irritating, you're like, oh, well, you've been through it, so I can't, like, it's not like you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I can't be like... Well, yeah, all your family are alive, so what the fuck do you know? Like, sometimes crosses through my head and you're like, that's not very helpful, carry on. But yeah, I think you're right. Just finding one person. I think, again, we're kind of lucky that we have this so many ways of communication now. And I think if you can just, like, even, like, agree a symbol with your friend, like some stupid emoji that you just text that's like, just call me. Like, but of course, it's so hard. It's so hard if you're feeling like you can't talk to someone.
Where are you? I want to say, this is something I still kind of struggle with, but actually it is a nice thing. But you know, when you tell someone, oh yeah, my sister died, or you mention the death, and then people say, oh, I'm like, straight away without even a breath, yeah, they're like, oh, I'm sorry. And it's like,
you're like, take a pause, take a moment.
Little moment. Well, how do you... I always feel a bit uncomfortable. But I guess I know they're just acknowledged. It's an acknowledgement, isn't it? Yeah. I've always felt a little bit uncomfortable with that. I don't know what that is.
With the phrase or the quickness?
The phrase and the quickness.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's really tricky. It's so personal. Like, and again, I think it depends on what day you are on almost as well. And like, if you're on a good day, or like you haven't had an anniversary, or like, you know, generally everything's fine, and they go, oh, I'm sorry, you're like, oh, it's okay. But it's when days when, like, if you've had a week of, like you said, like the scars open, you feel like your skin is just so raw, and then someone's like, oh, right. And you think, what do you mean, oh, right? I just told you my dad's dead. Like, oh, right. I tend to now, but this has only come from the podcast, because I now talk about it so much, I feel much I'm much more comfortable with their uncomfortableness.
Yeah.
Like, I used to be like, oh, it's my job to fix this because I'm the one whose dad's dead, so obviously I have to solve your uncomfortableness. Whereas now I kind of lean into it. So if I want to talk about it, I just carry on. If they've been like, oh, I'm sorry, I'd be like, yeah, you know, he died of pancreatic cancer and I was 15. And it was very quick. So, yeah, it is something like and I just kind of give them the details.
Yeah.
Because I feel, but I only do that if I want to and I'm in a good enough space to talk about it, when I'm not going to just like get angry or start sobbing uncontrollably. Because I do think what I'm trying to show is like, I can talk about it. You can talk about death. We could talk about death and you won't catch it. Like, you're not going to burst into flames or like, you know, immediately have cancer by me talking about it, because that's the fear. You can see they're like, oh god. Or also, I think it's quite good for them to see that I can talk about it and I'm not going to be inconsolable and we can move on. Because I think that's what people just aren't practiced, because they haven't talked about it. They're just not practiced at, like, talking about your sister, asking her name. Oh, and oh, that's, you know, very sad. Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. And oh, the 10-year anniversary, right? Okay. Anyway, so now we, like, they don't, I think they think, oh, if we talk about it, it won't
very
end.
Very true. Yeah, that's so true. You've made me think now. Yeah.
But that's only through, because I now do the podcast, people now, not expect, but people will talk about it more in front of me. And I've had this situation, say there's a group of people, one person's in the club, and they'll be like, oh, Carad, you know, my sister died, and we'll start this conversation. And you see the other people being like, oh God, they're both doing it. They're both talking about it. Okay, what do we do? Because we haven't lost anyone, so we don't know how to help. Oh, they've stopped. Okay, they seem to be fine. And you can see them watching and being like, oh, it's okay, actually, isn't it? It's not going to destroy the mood or like mean we all have to go home and cry.
Yeah.
But that is only through, as I said, being a bit more confident about talking about it, being a bit more in control of it.
Yeah.
And I think that takes time as well. Like I said, I'm 20 plus years now. So I, at seven, you know, say at 7 years, I couldn't have done that. I just would have been like, I can't speak. I can't get the words out.
It's so personal, isn't it? But that you're right, actually. I'm thinking that's probably why I've got annoyed, because it's the mood that I'm in.
Yeah.
So when they say it, I'm like, oh, yeah. And you can get annoyed sometimes. Well, sorry, well, don't you want to know more about my traumatic experience?
Yeah.
Are you just going to move on to talk about what breakfast you've had?
Yeah, exactly. And I just think, I've tried to get a bit more empathetic with people who don't get it, which is really hard because I think, like you said, you become hypersensitive, you become empathetic to people's pain, and I feel like that as well. If someone's upset, I feel it. I really feel it. And I've tried to be more empathetic to the people who don't show emotion to be like, okay, they're not showing me any emotion. They're acting like they're not bothered. But perhaps it's hard for them, or perhaps they can't say. Or I've also had experiences where I thought someone was very cold and then have found out later, like, oh, they actually had somebody who died and they can't even, they're not at the point they can even talk about it. And that really made me go, oh, you just don't know, do you? You don't know why they're being crap. Sometimes it is a really much more bigger thing. Yeah,
you never know what's going on in people's lives.
Yeah.
And also, do you know what? The recent, there's obviously lots of triggers that come up sometimes that take you unaware, that get you off guard and unaware. And my biggest trigger recently was the death of Caroline Flack.
And oh yeah, of course.
People were just, certain people just dropped me a text, sent me a link to a news article. People that don't know me that well, obviously don't know what I've been through. They're not obviously not meaning to upset me or you know.
Yeah, it's not malicious, but still.
It's not malicious, but it was like, hang on, you don't know what my relationship is to suicide. And like, this is a lot. This isn't gossip. This isn't like, this is a whole person and it's a family. And that kind of just really took me back. And I know obviously she's in the public eye and that's, but I just wish, but then that's only me, people would be a bit more sensitive sometimes around death.
Did you talk to any friends who shared it, or did you just kind of go, oh, okay, whatever?
I think I spoke to some of my close friends that said, oh gosh, people just sent me a link out of the blue, and they obviously don't know my relationship to it, but it was just so triggering, especially with Caroline. She used to be the same agent as me. I'd met her maybe 3 or 4 times. We had some lovely, really like lovely fun exchanges, and she gave me great advice about being in the industry as well. Yeah, it's just so sad, you know, you just really relate to that sadness and the pain and the family, and it just made me think I really need to continue working on my self-care, which is a daily thing now.
Yeah,
it's a daily thing. Because another thing for me in my grieving process was that I felt like, will I one day just suddenly, will a switch just flip in my head, and one day I might think that I can't go on. I kind of got worried that it might happen to me, because I thought my sister was fine, and I kind of had that anxiety, I guess, which I've learned to let go of, and it's not, and you know, we're completely different, and
you just had the 10-year anniversary, you got to go to the cemetery. How are you feeling, I guess, post the 10-year anniversary? Are you feeling and about,
how am I feeling Raquel? Now a new age of grief.
Yeah It's weird how it does process. You do change your journey, really changes.
The journey changes, you change. Obviously, I still miss her all the time, every day. I do speak to her. I feel like she really is there. I've had some wonderful, like, I don't know, like transcendent experiences where I've really felt her presence and her energy. And you know, she is within me. I'm a part of her. So I'm almost, I just feel like I want to honour my sister's hopes for me.
Yeah.
And live my life the best way I can, because she always just wanted the best of me, and she was so proud of me. So all the achievements that I do, everything that I do, I kind of have her spirit with me. She's like my cheerleader, who was always cheerleading me on. And you know, yes, it's sad that she didn't have that for herself, but she did truly have that for me. So that's always at the back of my mind. I just feel a sense of safety and security, which might sound
I know what you mean.
She truly loved me. She was so proud of me, wanted the best for me. And I can see a lot of similarities in us as I was writing things down, you know. And even what was weird for me was when I first started doing TV, when I first started presenting, and I did my first voiceover, and then watched it back on TV, and I was like, I sound like Raquel. Because I never really...
Yeah, never heard yourself properly.
Yeah, never heard my voice like that. And I was like, wow, we sound the same. That's my sister.
Oh, that's so nice.
And I think I'm at peace with it, you know.
Mm.
I'm at peace. And the biggest thing for me as this year I've started on a kind of learning to tune into myself more, my feelings and thoughts. It's all about accepting, not resisting the feelings that come to you. Feel them, invite them in. They're all part of you.
Yeah.
And you know, don't deny yourself anything. Just be kind. I'm just kind to myself.
It's so wise. It's really wise. And it's one of those things about great advice is that it sounds so simple because it is. Like, yeah, just stop fighting yourself. Just especially with grief. I think when you're early in your journey, you have such a battle of like, I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to be this sad. I don't want it. And then as you get further in your journey, you're like, well, I guess I am. I just am this sad. Mm-hmm. And I am this angry. And of course, the irony, as soon as you do let it in, it kind of dissipates and it kind of
it
isn't as strong as the pain of fighting how you feel. It's just like exhausting. So I think that's, what a way to honour her. She sounds so cool. She sounds genuinely cool.
She is. No, I've just been so happy to get this opportunity. Yeah. Her laugh was funny. She was a bright personality. She was so generous and caring and giving and sensitive. And there were so many amazing personality traits and people absolutely loved and adored her too. It's just she had this side that she hid from everyone.
And
she was great. It's been great to remember her again and evoke all the feelings. Well,
you've done a good job, because I really can picture this very cool older sister. You know, like when you go to your friend's house, you're like, oh, she's cool.
Like, she was very cool. Yeah. She was so pretty. And everyone's like, your sister's so... This is all we care about is looks. When you're back, your sister's so pretty. And I'm like, I know.
That's not why I think it's
She was cool.
She sounds really cool. And thank you so much for talking
about Raquel. I've been like... trying to get everything out, because there is a lot in, but as I said, I've loved being able to share this, and even if just one person takes solace from our chat today, then I'm very happy.
Thank you
Cariad.
You can follow Sabrina on Twitter at the Sabrina Grant, and you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the Griefcast. The music was composed by the Glue Ensemble. The show was recorded in my living room and I think Sabrina's living room. The show is edited by Kate Holland. The artwork is by Jade Perkin. And generally, thank you for listening. And remember, you are not alone.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.